Thank you very much, Margaret, Honorable Minister John Day, my fellow speakers, ladies and gentlemen, a very good morning to all of you. Can you hear me out there? I don't have an Australian voice, I'm afraid, with a nice deep bass. First of all, let me bring you fraternal greetings from all the librarians as well as public librarians from Singapore. I think they would love to meet you, and I think they would also love to learn about you. And I think that this seminar is a kind of way in which I can represent some of the experiments that they are doing. So it's not me, I'm their voice in that sense. I'm delighted to be here in Perth, and let me first of all also thank the State Library and the organizers for inviting me and giving me the opportunity to share some of this with you. Although Singapore and Perth appear to be very different, there are also some, if you look hard enough, there are some similarities. And of course, one of that is that we go to bed together and we get up together. Maybe that didn't come out quite right. Must be the influence of today's headlines. What I meant is that we go to bed at the same time and get up at the same time and go to work at the same time, have lunch and dinners at the same time, because we are in the same time zone, even though it's a 5.5 hour flight crossing 2 or 3 countries. So one of the great similarities is, of course, our public libraries. We all face the same challenges and the same opportunities. And I think that the kind of seminar today will help us to learn from each other. Now, to look ahead, what I need to do is also to look a little bit behind, because I want to quickly run through in the first few minutes where we came from and where we are today. Because for some of the more rural libraries, that in itself might represent a little bit of change. So let me do that. But first of all, let me explain, as Margaret did, that the National Library Board is an overseeing board. I oversee both the National Library as well as the public libraries. So today, I'm only going to focus my attention on the public libraries. The National Libraries, of course, has its own interests and its own innovations and experiments in the area of memories, in the area of heritage, in the area of preservation and access. And that's a very, very big area itself in harvesting and collecting today's memories, today's events, which are future memories. So we are addressing that as well. But as far as the public libraries are concerned, it's a slightly different exercise. Very quickly, we run a 3-tier public library system. We have regional libraries, which are fairly large in scale. They might be about 10,000 square meters in size. Then we have public libraries, children's libraries, and of course, we also run some client libraries and some school libraries. We, in fact, run one polytechnic library as well. These other libraries we run on a contract basis. That is to say, they're outsourced to the National Library Board because they don't want to run them themselves. So it's on a fee for service arrangement. Now, very quickly, you can tell from this slide that the number of loans is, let me give you the latest figure for FY09 with the year ending 31st March. We had a record loans of 30 million, exceeding 30 million loans for a population, a domestic population of 4 million people, of whom about 2 million are members. Now, that's across public libraries of 22 public libraries. And in FY09, we topped 40 million visits. It's not exactly visitors, but it's visits because they're not unique visitors. And I'll explain to you how we managed to attract that many visitors. So it's a very, very customer-intensive operation we're talking about. More intensive than public transport, more intensive than hospitals or schools, to bring that many people in and out of the library system. In electronic sense, the number of electronic loans and electronic retrievals is also increasing a great deal. We're touching now 16 million, but in terms of log-ons, we are about 140 million. I should say page views, because we count a page view as someone who has spent at least 30 minutes browsing our resources. So a download, electronic retrieval means that they download it to their own PC or they have printed it out. We have about 8 million books in our collections, circulating collections, and we have about 2.6 million enquiries, that is reference enquiries. Margaret mentioned about the Library 2010 plan, and let me just briefly highlight some of the aspects of it. The way that we divide our customers are to talk about young people, children, and our goal is that by the time they reach teenhood, they should be enthused about learning, in the sense that they should have a sense of self-discovery and awe of learning and the curiosity to develop their curiosity. So the range of materials and the range of games and programs, storytelling and many other things, is to engage them and bring them back into the library. When they become, in a sense, teens, then the type of engagement will change somewhat, and I'll explain that later. For adults, we're talking about self-growth, personal growth, where they want to upgrade their skills, they want to upgrade their career prospects, and their professional enhancements. For senior citizens, the idea is that they continue to be mentally stimulated by reading, by engaging in programs and seminars and workshops. And I call this productive leisure, rather than to do things like watching too much TV or in Singapore, there's a phenomenon where they go out to the marketplace and watch pretty women and so on. We also provide services for business and government, real-time competitive market information to companies, to industries, and that's to give them a competitive edge. So self-discovery, self-reliance, self-fulfillment, and competitive edge. And those are some of the programs that come through the various L2010 strategies. Now, we've started with this scene not very long ago. I would say about 15 years ago. Everything was manual. The queues were long. It took about 60 minutes to borrow a book and about 30 minutes to return a book, because it was a card-based system. So it's entirely changed from then. So we are now running zero queues, instantaneous borrowing and returning, RFID checkout, RFID drop-off, RFID sorting. And we were the first library system in the world to adopt RFID completely, even before the standards were set. So that created a little bit of problem much later, because when you're early mover, you don't set the technical standards. You go with what's available. Very easy to use, very easy to become a member. Your borrow inquiry stations and your library e-kiosk. Today, you can become a library member in less than 5 minutes by flash your ID card in the slot, key in your phone number and your email address, and your library card pops out in 5 minutes. So it's absolutely easy. Library spaces have been totally reinvented, completely. We did a teens library, the one on the right of the screen, and in the teens library, we brought in a group of teens to help us design the library. And basically, we got a group of them and asked, what would you like? Assuming this was a free space, totally blank green space, what would you do with it? What would you like to have? And the first thing they said was, of course, we'd like to have a lot of CDs and music, lots of comics. So we provided a base load of music CDs, lots of comics. We asked them about the furniture, and they said, well, we don't need any furniture, really. just put some cushions on the floor and some low-lying. We can sit anywhere we want. It's not a big problem for us. So we did that, and we said, what color would you like? What color scheme would you like? They said, oh, all black, please. So we said, all black, okay, sure, no problem. Anything else? Yes, could we have a stage and amplifiers and so we can jam in there? So we did. We did put in a stage. We did allow jamming. We'd had to do some acoustics to prevent the sound from going too far deep into the rest of the library. But by doing all this, we were able to experiment and pass some of these lessons down to the other libraries. And therefore, this library today has the highest teen loans. Because by bringing them into the library, basically they get to use all the other facilities as well. They get to know what's available, all the programming as well. And library spaces have become very, very different. We have a lot of niche libraries for the performing arts, for example, where you could borrow a score, a music score, and go to a practice room and practice directly. You could have a dance studio and practice some dance moves, borrow the music, salsa, or whatever you want, and dance within the library space. Lots of exhibition spaces as well. Lots and lots of library programming. In any year, we would have close to 4,000 to 5,000 programs, which bring in a whole range of people. If you see on the bottom right, Born to Read, we have programs for kids who have just, mothers who have just given birth. We give them a birth kit. We give them a birth kit with reading resources for children and a music CD as well as a CD of nursery rhymes and so on. And a resource kit which helps them to choose what books to read to their children. We used to give this when we have learned about the birth, but we found that that was too late, because by then they're too busy doing other things. So now we give the birth kit with a book journal just prior to birth. And in that book journal, just like your health journal measures your vaccinations and your growth in length and weight and other things. In the library journal, they record the first book they were read to. They record the first visit to the library, the first librarian they met, and so on and so forth. So it records their literary development. And then we have lots and lots of music programs, lifestyle arts programs. In e-resources and e-books, of course, we have subscribe to a wonderful range of databases, about 170 databases. We have about now 100,000, over 100,000 fiction and non-fiction titles, comprising almost a million items for reading. Now, about half of them are downloadable, half of them are not downloadable, but you can read them on your home screen. We're now experimenting with download stations so that you can download them to your iPad or your Kindle or even your smartphone. So this is where we are. E-books for primary schools, Tumbletots, Tumblebooks, very, very popular. Now, the thing about e-books for children is that they can borrow them anytime and they can return them anytime. So what happens is that they can borrow them, read them with the animation and the games and the sounds, and return them basically on the same day or the next day. Whereas if they took them out from a library, they'll have to wait for mommy to take them to the library next. So the turnover of each copy of Tumbletots online is about twice the turnover of a physical book. In other words, in terms of the number of times they are borrowed. So it's very effective. And these books come with animation, they come with sounds, they come with lots of bells and whistles. E-collections, our own, these are our own NLB's heritage collections, our Singapore Heritage Collection. We are also linked to the British Library, and I think that we'll shortly be linked to the National Library of Australia. We have our own online repository of artistic works, interviews, plays, music, and so on. Singapore Pictures, Singapore Infopedia, which is our own librarian-created material. Singapore Story, Singapore History, and so on. And lots more of our own digitized material, all the rare books, e-books. We call them SG Books. We're going to have SG Music. So lots of Singapore materials are now online. So it's quite easy. If you key in Raffles, you will probably be able to find original letters by Stanford Raffles, for example. And also electronic exhibitions. Most of our exhibitions are converted to electronic form. Lots and lots of campaigns. Read Singapore is our major reading campaign, runs for about 8 weeks, where we select a number of novels and short stories and poems, which are also translated into the other languages. So you might have a Chinese book translated to English, and the same story translated to Malay and Tamil, and a Tamil book translated into the other. So it's a lot of community reading. So lots of book discussions take place. During this period, it's really a national activity. We borrowed the idea from One City, One Book. But instead of One City, One Book, which we thought was rather limiting, we expanded it much more. So it's on a theme basis. So we have book selection committees which use the theme to select the books and the short stories. And this year's theme is Roads Less Traveled. And it's a very interesting theme. And many of the stories reflect that theme. In fact, it will be launched sometime next in May, this campaign. We also have Kids Read. Kids Read is a program for low-income kids where we get volunteers to go out to the kids' homes or schools or community centers to read to them. We have a program for fathers. We notice that fathers don't read to their children as much as mothers. So we have a program called 10,000 Fathers Reading. This has now changed to 10,000 More Fathers Reading because it's in its third year. So lots and lots of activities and promotions to get fathers to read to their children. And this is having a multiplier effect as well. Book Cross, based on the famous book crossing system, the worldwide book crossing system, but this is a book cross, nationwide book cross. So people will drop their books, the material that they do not want into the library. We will put a book cross label on them and deposit them in coffee shops, in taxis, many nooks and corners. So people can pick them up, and then after they finish reading them, they can drop them off in another book cross point. This doesn't require much resources because the books are not ours. All we need to do is to process the book, register them on the website. We also ask them to tell us on the website, the book cross website, where they picked it up and where they dropped it. So we have an idea of where they are. So that's the book cross. Let me just let you know how many members we have on this book cross. We have about 3,000 registered book crosses. That means these are the people who register on the website. But I'm sure there are a lot more people who are not registered, who have taken the books. We take an optimistic view that books that don't come back, that they are still in circulation. And we've released about 17,000 books so far. We do a lot to reaching out to the underserved because there are a lot of people who can't make it to the libraries for whatever reason. We have a Deliver Me project for people in old people in homes, in nursing homes, in hospitals. So we have a group of volunteers who will pack materials and books according to what the individual wants. So we first of all we We ask the person what kind of books you like to read, what specific authors, and then the volunteers will pack these books. And we have a scheme with the local cab company. And the local cab company will do a free delivery for us to the homes. And then it's collected back, and then the next cycle starts. So this it includes handicapped children as well. We have a bus, a mobile bus. You might be wondering why on earth we need a mobile bus in Singapore. This is the first wireless RFID-enabled bus. That means it's a real-time transaction. You can do a real-time transaction. It's based on 2.5G telephone network. It's exactly the same as a branch. So it goes out to schools for the handicapped, schools for the disabled, to the mind schools, which are the intellectually disabled, people who might feel embarrassed to go to the library. But the idea is that having tasted the facilities of this branch, this moving branch, they then venture out into the nearby branch because it's not intended to be the permanent library. So it kind of teases them and gives them confidence that they can go and borrow on their own, that they can use the technology to borrow on their own. It also goes to very low-income areas and neighborhood schools, as well as makes its presence at various community reading carnivals and so on and so forth. So what we have to do is we have to rejig the collections in the mobile bus for each different visit. So it's not a big thing. It's a very, very interesting concept. Of course, we also have our advisory services in the public libraries. And so those are the very, very wide range of services that we have reached up to today. So the question is, where do we go from here? Is that all? Is that going to secure our future? Is that going to keep us relevant? And I just want to highlight three or four major trends here. The first trend I have labeled as not a meal, but a snack. Because if you analyze the way that people are reading today, it's changed completely. In fact, even the way that you and I read, to be frank, has changed. We seldom read the whole thing. We like to read snippets, and we like to read small segments. And for most of us, that's more than enough to get the gist of what we are looking for. Except for favorite authors and fiction and Booker Prize winners or your Australian Literature Prize winners, you might borrow and read the whole book. But for many, many young people who are used to short messages, who are used to email, who are used to instant reactions, they don't necessarily read the whole book. And the way that they read is also very different. So when you are snacking now, multitasking, and snacking a bit of potato chips, some nuts here, and so on and so forth, how do you get them to read? And I think this is going to be a great challenge for public librarians. So let me give you two examples of how we have tried to overcome this. The first one is called Quest. And Quest is a card game. It is a collector's card game. In other words, we noticed that among children, young boys between the ages of 7 and 12 are the most reluctant readers. This is the time when they're out in the playgrounds playing computer games, kicking footballs, and so on. And it's the girls of that age are all right, but it's the boys who are not reading. So we needed to find a way to get these boys to read. Now we did some focus group discussions and found that the things that they like to do most are collecting cards, sports cards, celebrity cards. They love anime, and they love fantasy. So what we did was we created a storyline. One of our librarians created a storyline and put snippets of these stories, of this story, on collecting cards. So basically, when you borrow a book, you get 3 or 4 of these cards in a pack. And the idea is, you got to, if you want to learn more about your anime character or your fantasy character, you got to keep on borrowing and reading and get the cards. Now, we discovered that within 3 weeks, these cards were on websites for exchange. Seriously, they were on sale on eBay because they were so serious about collecting the whole story. Now, it was not the cards alone, but it was also backed up by a number of multimedia applications on the website, on blogs, and so on, so that we would load more interesting facts about the character as the story went on. So you get more interesting characterizations and relationships building as you got more cards. So you got more and more into the game as time went on. So we also had cosplay. Cosplay is when the kids wear the costumes and come to the library and role play. So you'll find that they would come dressed up as their favorite character, and it's like Star Wars, isn't it? So they then act out, and that's when they also exchange their cards. So it was a great successful experiment. Let me tell you the results. 2.2 million loans by this age group in 4 months, with 80,000 participants, and 74% of them were boys. It's exactly the group that we wanted to achieve, and 35,000 hits on this website. The second experiment was called Read and Reap. Read and Reap was for a higher group of children. These are for the older teens who were beyond this card collecting stage. What we did was we created posters. I forgot to bring some, although I had them ready to pack. Posters with, but if you go to the Read and Reap website, you can easily find those posters. These posters are attractively designed, and they will contain an excerpt from a novel. They will contain an excerpt from a novel and a question. And teachers in school, teachers of English language, English literature, of general paper, would then use those questions in order to stimulate discussion and reading. Now, it didn't matter to us that they did not read the whole book, because the idea is for them to read the passage, reflect upon it. And then at the website, as well as on the poster, we will give them the call number of where the book is. We will give them related reading materials, similar authors, same genre, and so on and so forth. So if they like what they are reading, they can then extend it and go and look for more resources and more materials. So there are discussions and postings on the Read and Reap website, and it's used extensively, as I said, by language teachers, particularly literature teachers. So this is a way where we have connected with the schools, because these posters go out to the schools as well. Very quickly. So this is a question. If you were told you had only 1 year to live, what would you do? So this question arises from the text. So a lot of people start, the instant responses, of course, is that I'll play computer games or meet my friends, etc. But as you go down, you'll get some of the more serious, more reflective comments, because some of the readers would then have gone to find where this quote came from and what is the context of the quote. So this is for the higher level teens. The second issue that I want to raise is that I think we have gone beyond the digital divide, and we keep talking about the digital divide, and we've been talking about this for more than 10-20 years. And in my view, there's no more a digital divide. It's getting to be a gadget divide. Because you have kids, rich kids with smartphones, and poor kids with normal phones. Yeah, and they all want the smartphones. They all want the iPhone. They want the latest iPhone. And today, of course, there are iPhone clones similar to iPhones, HTC, Samsung. Everybody's having a smartphone. iPad, Kindle, Sony e-reader, lots and lots of gadgets. So the question is, how do public libraries react and respond to this proliferation of reading gadgets? And this is a great challenge. And of course, it is this response will be very much constrained by what publishers let you do, whether they let you distribute these gadgets or not. I think my personal view is that it's impossible for libraries to dish out these gadgets because you have an equity problem. As I said, I have 38 million loans, 30 million loans. It's not going to be possible to allocate gadgets according to any fair criteria at all. But if people bring their gadgets in, then I'm prepared to give them a download station where they can plug their iPhone or whatever and download. And if that is true, then they don't even need a download station because you can download wirelessly in any case. So I think that the tension is going to be between people who have the gadgets and people who don't have the gadgets. I don't think broadband is an issue anywhere in any school or any community in Australia. Minister Day, don't you think you agree with me on that? Yeah. So you've got the iPad, various types of readers, and so on. So our response is to create what's called a library in your pocket. And you can download this application. It's a URL. It's not an application. http://m.nlb.gov.sg. And what you will get from the URL is a series of applications. You can do your catalog search. You can instantly connect to your account to see what you've borrowed, when it's due. You can look for events, and you can book the events on your phone. You can check for new arrivals. You can ask, put in your query. You can look at all the library blogs. There are about 10 different library blogs going on. You can subscribe to different kinds of e-services. For example, the e-notification service, which tells you, for example, that your book is going to be due in 3 days, or that you have returned the book on the book drop, and so on and so forth. You can actually read some short stories, which are copyright-free. Contact information and feedback. And we are now in the process of redesigning this into the iconic Apple icons because most people are now, they zip through icons rather than navigate through links. You can also have short stories. You can even have podcasts on your phone. So increasingly, libraries are going to where people are. You can't expect people to come to the library necessarily. You've got to go out and be in those spaces that people inhabit. And I say this word spaces very carefully because it's not about places, but it's more about spaces, virtual spaces, digital spaces, as well as, of course, physical spaces. My third point is that the notion of trust and the nature of trust has changed. All the research shows that the level that people or teens hold, if they had to ask somebody, it would not be the teachers, it would not be your parents, it would not be the librarians for sure. I'm sorry to say. Trust has become modified to who answers quickest and how many of the same answers they get. So, for example, if you were to do some research on a consumer product that you wanted to buy, let's say latest digital camera or something that you are looking for, a smartphone, you go to a website, you post a query can someone advise me on, I'm looking for a digital camera, 10 megapixels, etc., $400 or less? And you will get a lot of responses. Now, these are totally from strangers. These are people you don't know. They could be marketers. They could be people with an interest in selling you those phones or those cameras. Particularly in the area of health, people go to health websites. And today, a lot of websites are very well designed to look authentic and look very safe. But in fact, they're not. They will give you very dangerous information if you're not very careful. They will give you alternative treatments, and not Western treatments, not your the kinds of treatments you will get in a proper hospital. And people who are desperate are more likely to go to those websites. And the inputs they are getting are totally from people you don't know. So what happens is that, especially for teenagers and people who use the social media, the balance is now between how many quick responses I get, because they need the answer quickly, as well as how many of the same answers I'm getting. So if you get two or three opposite answers, then they would have doubts. But if two of the three are the same, or four of the ten are the same, that's good enough. That is good enough for them. So if you as a librarian are not responding quickly for inquiries, then they will take that information from elsewhere, from strangers, basically. Okay? And here are some examples. Please help me quickly with this maths problem. And there's a maths problem. This is on Yahoo Answers, a screenshot from Yahoo Answers. And look at the answer. It is a fashion advertisement. It's nothing to do with maths at all. Okay? So it is an advertisement for Adidas and Prada and various other things. Okay, Jordan, Prada, etc. Here's another one. Okay, how do you get rid of the puffiness beneath my eyes? Wow. Now the answer is, use a clean spoon in the freezer and put it on your eyes, you know. I have no clue whether this works. Now, look at the top, it says resolved question. That means to say the moderator of Yahoo Answers had decided this is good enough. This is good enough, fine. Please don't respond to this anymore. So you are getting information from people who have got no clue what they are doing. So the notion of trust is no longer authenticated, validated, the things that librarians are very prone to stand by. Okay. Of course, Wikipedia is totally peer reviewed. Okay. So Wikipedia is now officially, you can quote from Wikipedia. So many papers quote Wikipedia and the source. Wikipedia is the source. And isn't Wikipedia no any different? Of course, it's peer reviewed by lots of things. But the danger is this. They try to give you a balanced view, right? So they give you two points of view, for example, in this health reform debate. But keep in mind that a balanced view appears to be 50-50 or evenly balanced, even when the actual views might be not 50-50, it might be 80-20 or 90-10. But in order to give that 1% minority a viewpoint, they've got to put it in to keep it balanced. So it appears always that the balanced view is 50-50. When in many cases, in most cases, there is a majority view. There is a conventional wisdom, or there's a generally accepted view of the facts of the case. But there might be some people who don't agree, and that's got to be reflected in the Wikipedia entry. So be very, very careful. So what is our response to this trusted thing? One of the things that we've done is that we have put our presence. In fact, we used to troll Yahoo Answers. My librarians used to run through, and if there were any interesting questions that they felt that they should step in and answer, they would do it. Okay? And they would put an NLB logo to that answer. And almost every time my librarian stepped in and answered, it was a resolved answer. In other words, the moderator would say, that's good enough, you know, this is the best answer. Don't waste time anymore. So we used to troll all that. Now what we've done is we have created our presence in the most popular teen websites. So for example, in this site called Stomp, which is a very popular with teens, and it's got all sorts of teen stuff like fashion and tech and body and mind and money and stuff like that. There is a category there called Ask Libby. Okay, and Libby, of course, is a personification, persona of a librarian. So it's totally hidden. They don't know that it's a librarian. But our librarians have worked with this website to provide answers. So we need to intervene sometimes to get them the answers that they're looking for. So we also, of course, have our own regular Ask website and Ask blog. And the Ask blog, of course, is searchable through Google and Yahoo. The content is fully searchable. And my final point is, I mentioned this earlier, is a library a place or a space? And I think that we have to get used to the idea that it is more than a physical place. It is a seamless, borderless interaction between a physical space, a digital space, an electronic space. And it is to be where your users are at any time. Seamlessly transiting between the two. So inviting to the library physically when they need to, but not necessarily. In other words, you've got to be on their Facebook, you've got to be on their networks, you've got to be on their blogs. And if you look at a lot of our resources very carefully, all our resources have been brought out from deep within the web to the surface. So they are, we know that they don't go to nlb.gov.sg or pl.sg or nl.sg. We know that. That's not their first homepage. Their homepage is usually Google or Stomp or some of their favorite websites or Facebook. So we need to be in those spaces. So if they search in Google, they will find me. They will find NLB. They will find the resources of NLB. So that's how. So by doing that, we have increased the usage of our digital resources by more than 500 times. The number of accesses to our digital resources is now, by exposing it on microsites, it's become huge. So let me give you, to finish off, a few examples. Physical virtual space. A good example is Wii games. Librarians would be terrified to put computer games in their libraries. There's nothing to do with reading at all. Okay, it's nothing to do with reading. It's just a computer animation activity. But we did a trial. We did a trial just to see who would be attracted. And if you look at the bottom page, you'll see that it's become, bottom picture, it's become an intergenerational activity. Not just a teen activity. Where the younger kids are teaching the older patrons how to play bowling or tennis or what have you, using the Wii setup. So now we've decided to put some limited Wii games in the public libraries. And we work with sponsors like Xbox and so on, as well as the Singapore Cyber Games Association. And the idea is that we will use this opportunity to teach them about cybersecurity, because we know they're going to be on the net anyway. Okay, so we use this opportunity because these are the people who are always online. So we want to teach, because they go to those setups where they are competing worldwide against each other. You know, so we want to teach them about what might be some of the pitfalls. So we have an agenda there, but we also help use the we to bring them in. So we've reached the point where today people are talking about bookless libraries. Now, that sounds like hospitals without beds or restaurants without food. So, but the fact that the nature of the space is changing, the nature of the place is changing. I think that this is more likely to happen first in academic libraries. And then we've got to see how they manage this revolution. I think for the public libraries, we have about 10 years of breathing space before anything like this happens. So it's good for us because we are able to watch what the university libraries are going to do, and perhaps our speakers later can tell us about what the universities are doing and responding. But this is a big issue because it tells us that you could have a fully electronic library in future. I'm not saying it's coming straight away. Maybe 15 years' time, where libraries are no longer physically located but carried in everybody's pocket, for example. So one of the explorations that we are doing is to create modular libraries. We call this Library Express. It's a modular library. It's a book dispenser, book drop, and information screen. And on this information screen, we'll have all the library events. And then you can look at that and use your smartphone to book and touch base with the librarians. It could well be a librarian avatar. It could well be a librarian speaking to you, answering your questions, a librarian type of person. Okay, and we have refined this concept to the point where we can take it to a mall and leave it in a mall for a year, or take it to a commercial building lobby and put it in a commercial building lobby if the owners of the building think that it's a good thing to have. We are discussing it with some industrial plant owners who have a factory with about 5,000 workers, and they think that this is something good for the workers to take a book home. So we're now exploring putting this in various places. So it's a very portable, self-contained, self-service library. It's a book dispenser, book return, a catalog, as well as a event and information screen. Another thing about space, let me tell you about what we've done with Facebook. How are we doing for time? Okay. We've created a library, My Library, on Facebook, but it's not an informational, let me just clarify, it's not an informational site. What we've done is the application connects your library account to your Facebook account. Totally. You bring your library account into your Facebook account. So anything that you could have done on your library account, which is through nlb.gov.sg, and there are lots of features that you could do. You could look at what books you have borrowed, what are your overdue books, what are the fines that you have to pay, your events that's coming up, your reminders. A lot of that are on your account. What we've done is we've brought that entirely into the Facebook concept. So by linking your Facebook to your library account, what you now have is your library account on Facebook with the characteristics of Facebook. With the characteristics of Facebook. Now let me show you how this works. So you link your library account to your Facebook account. That's the first thing that you do. And now you can do everything that you can do on your library account, and you can do everything that you normally do on Facebook, which is to share. So on the library account, you can have home, ask a library, new arrivals, events, blogs, my stuff, recommendations by other people, and invite other people. So let's say you go to new arrivals up there, new arrivals, and then you can take the new arrival and you can post it to somebody's profile. You could post it on your profile. You could recommend it to someone. You can add it to My Stuff. So you can put it to My Stuff. What happens is you are creating your personal library. You're creating your personal library in your Facebook account. Or you could reserve this book. So if you click this book, click reserve, you can then you wish to reserve and you can choose which public library you want to collect it. And then you're told that, yes, there's a $1.55 fee. And yes or no. And then you have reserved the book. Now, this is exactly what you would do on your NLB, your own personal library account, once you've logged in. But in this case, you don't need to put in your library username and password. You use your Facebook username and password. Now, the beauty of this is anything that you can do on Facebook, you can do with this library account. You can share any new arrival with your friends. You can, if you're reading a library blog and you like something in the library blog, you can immediately send it to your friends. You can invite your friends to this My Library account. You can, if you like an event that you're attending to, you can then invite your friend to join you with that event. You can do everything that Facebook helps you to do. So in fact, they have created a wonderful engine for us to use. So we expect this to go viral. We expect this for people to say, hey, have you seen this? You know, I've got this book from the library. And they share it immediately. Immediately. Okay. And you can post your recommendations. And for example, in Ask a Librarian, you post an inquiry. And here's one on Patrick Swayze. Does the library have any resources on Patrick Swayze? So the librarian will answer that. You can then take that answer and put it onto your profile page. So everybody who visits you can see that answer. Oops, sorry. Okay, so you can also publish something onto somebody else's page. Okay, to do with the inquiry. So get your friends on My Library now. So all their friends, and people got hundreds of friends, thousands of friends, by sending out one note, they invite everybody to join My Library. People who have not visited. So it's not to do with a place. It has to do with the space that people are inhabiting. Inhabiting meaning spending their time. Okay, so you have a My Library invitation. Would you add or no? Okay. So I think I've covered a lot of ground. I'll finish with this. Don't close the books on libraries, you know, from Library Journal. Right at the bottom are two pictures of our National Library and our Reference Library. Thank you very much for your attention.
Okay, we have time for some questions. There are a couple of roving microphone. So if you have a question, please hand up and, thank you, Liz. Please put your hand up and could you wait till the microphone gets to you so that all can hear? So, questions.
There is a recent kerfuffle with Facebook at the moment with allowing user information to external applications. How do you see this will affect your usage?
I think you have the option of going out and unchecking it. And so I recommend that those who don't want that facility to go to your privacy settings and unchecking it. But frankly speaking, most of the people who are on Facebook don't care. Unfortunately.
In relation to your Quest program,
yes.
Is that for sale?
It's available for sharing.
Sharing?
Sharing, yes.
Okay, I'll talk to you later.
Yes. We haven't commercialized it with a company. So it's really not for NLB to sell it to you. You know, but I think that if we took it to a company and they managed it and created it, then they would sell it to you. But for the moment, you can look into our Quest website and customize it to your own requirements. Over here in the center.
I was going to ask you which vegetables are blue, which is one of the questions up your head with this, but it's puzzled me. But you've spoken about a lot of organisational change, and that's fantastic. What sort of cultural resistance are you getting from your own organisation to continue to adapt to change?
What sort of cultural, assistance?
Organisational resistance.
I'm trying to answer this question without seeming to be self-serving. But I have to say that most of the librarians who work for the National Library Board are very open to trying out new things. Whenever we open a new public library, every public library has something different and new as an experiment. So it is never the same library, the same books, the same formats. And then we see what works and what doesn't work, and we are willing to ditch things that don't work. And we have an innovation process that kills projects before they get too expensive. We have lots of organizational mechanisms to encourage innovation and change. We have, for example, we create a marketplace for ideas. We provide money for people to bid for with their ideas. We provide them time to go to the Library Innovation Center to see whether those prototypes can work, to develop a prototype. We have what's called a black box competition every year. And under the black box competition, anybody in the whole library system can stand up and speak for 15 minutes to sell their idea. And the top 6 or top 8 will get money to develop that idea, that concept, into something workable. Sometimes the ideas are a little bit ahead of their time, so we keep that aside for a while and invest in those things that we think might work. So there's a constant churn of new ideas coming up from the ground. Of course, on the ground it may not seem like that. I'm seeing it from where I sit. On the ground, they might say this is too much work, you know, I've got other things to do, blah, 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 you know. Yes, that's always true. But they do feel stretched. But the way I look at it is that if anybody is passionate about an idea and they think that it can work and that it should be tried out, they will push hard. They will push hard. Even though it might be rejected the first time, you'll find that it resurfaces in another form with another group.
I've got one, Margaret. Prasad, I'm just in awe of the work that you've done in trying to engage, I guess, what we traditionally consider hard-to-reach groups like the young boys who are not big readers. How important, I guess I'd just like to understand a little bit better the work you do in establishing those programs. How important is the research and the consultation work, and what sort of form did you take, say, for that project?
When we did the Library 2010 plan, we knew that if I just show you if you look at my loan figures, you'll see that they are stuck at about 28 million for a number of years. Did you notice that? We knew that opening up new libraries is not going to solve this, mean more and more loans. It means going out and finding out who are the people who are not coming to the library. So we had to brainstorm and look at the underserved, what we call the, not undeserved, but underserved. And they fall into several groups. The low income, the people with disabilities, and strangely enough, professionals. People who are self-sufficient. So they are, I guess, in our last priority. So we do make some attempt to reach the professionals by bringing books out to the CBD. Not in the Molly form, but to bring a library booth out in at lunchtime in the CBD for professionals to walk by and borrow. So we have segmented what we think are the people who are not coming to the library. So we have different programs for different of those segments. So that's why in 2009 we crossed that hurdle, the 30 million barrier. There was a question.
I'm just intrigued about the kiosks that you talked about.
Oh, the kiosks, yes.
How many do you have? And I guess approximate costing?
Oh, which kiosk?
Oh, the...
The Library Express?
Yes.
Or the full kiosk?
Yes.
The full kiosk is an experimental kiosk. It works very well. It's been on display in several international exhibitions. And most lately at the Abu Dhabi Book Fair, International Book Fair, we showed this. The prince came round and he said, "Can I have 20? No, we don't have those full kiosks deployed. We are trying to work, as I said, with developers and factory owners and transport operators to locate them. What we need is not just the line and the connections. What we need is the logistic support to resupply the dispensers with books on a regular basis. Because the worst thing that you want is a half-empty dispenser. So you need very much like what the confectionery people have, which is to go around and refill all your confectionery machines, dispensing machines. So that's going to be. So we need enough of those. So we can't just do it for one. We need a network to be able to do that. My guess is it's an idea that's a little bit ahead of its time, but the prototype shows that it can work. What we are trying to do now is to streamline the look and feel of that machine and to get it more attractive to a building owner. Currently, it doesn't look as nice as what they would like to have. So we're working on that. And I'm very sure that when the time is ripe, we will be ready to move in. And I think that is the real key. You've got to have your ideas in place so that when the opportunity presents itself, you will be able to take advantage of it. The library e-kiosk, where you register yourself, etc., we've got hundreds of those.
I've got another question, which is about the prevailing sentiment, which is in Australia, I think, quite common amongst politicians and other resource allocators, that in the future, Google will supply the total solution. This is an undercurrent in thinking about information services and allocation.
Absolutely.
Of resources.
All stakeholders think that.
I think your presentation has actually given insights into how you're combating this sentiment. You're obviously active, entrepreneurial, and innovative. In effect, becoming a kind of competitor to Google and being quite credible in suggesting an alternative way in which information services and information resources access might occur in the future. Are there any other things that you're doing to actually challenge this wrong perception about the role of Google in the future?
I think the first thing that we do is not to mention Google as a competitor. Never do that. You can never win with the billions and trillions that Google has against the resources that you have. Google is nothing more than an efficient search engine. And it searches websites. What you have are information resources. So your challenge is how to get your information resources exposed to search engines. You make use of Google so that people will find what you have. We are not competing against Google. Google has no resources, no information resources. Google is nothing more than a search engine. Now, we train students and teachers on how to use Google properly, because research shows that the average search number of search terms on the Google search bar is about 1.5 or 1.7 words, which is a very silly, stupid way of using Google. If people are going to use Google properly, then they must know how to use the term to get not 500,000 outcomes, but the best 10 that they want. So what we have done is we have created very good metadata of our print resources and our digital resources, so that when you use Google to search, your stuff will come onto the first page. And you've got to expose as much as possible, including your entire catalog, to Google. So make use of Google, and don't fall into the miscommunication that, oh, Google will take over the libraries. Do you get my point?
I don't know. With your definition of Google as just a search engine, Google knows a heck of a lot of me about me from my email, from my search patterns, and they know more about me as an information searcher than my library will ever know. And I think that it's a bit glib to say, look, it's a search engine that we need to teach people how to use. I think that in terms of market research and knowing, matching me to information, which is basically what I see libraries as one of our main purposes, I think Google's getting an edge in a way that we're not, and we need to actually acknowledge that.
That's right. That's why I'm saying that they have infinitely more resources than we have. And if they can recognize your search patterns and know you better, then clearly you are competing with other information providers. That's what I'm saying. It's the other information providers who provide the optimization to get their products and services up there before you.
I don't know. I mean, Google's not letting us as information providers know their algorithms, and they're still in charge of the algorithms.
Oh,
there
are tricks.
What appears at the top.
I'm sure Excel will tell you how to get over that. There are ways and means. There are, in fact, books in the library which will tell you how to do that.
It's actually more a comment than a question, but you state in the beginning that broadband was so significant to what you've achieved in Singapore. It's probably just a comment that until Western Australia actually has broadband to all areas, we're a long way to go. So probably, yeah,
I think that's because of the terrain. But I think that, would I be correct in saying there's broadband in all the public libraries? No?
No.
Okay. Maybe you should work towards that. There's an advantage in coming from a urbanized urban area as opposed to a, you know, someplace in northern Western Australia. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Prasad. Please join with me in thanking and we have a small gift for you.